Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. The Sunbury Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. For Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And a fabulous service department that backs it all up every step of the way at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15. Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time now to take a trip to the Temple of Doom and hear about the rant of the day from the King of Judgmental.
And we take a trip to the incompetency of MLB umpires. I don't know if you saw the eighth inning of the Rangers-White Sox game last night, but there was a play at the plate.
I have a life, so go ahead.
Okay. It went to replay, and all of a sudden, they come out with the ruling that there was the catcher interference with the plate, and that allowed the what ended up being the game-winning run to score for the White Sox in the bottom of the eighth inning. Now, if you look at the replay, the catcher for Texas is, first of all, he was trying to get the force out at home, so his foot is on the home plate. Then he sees a runner coming. Then he backs up and is behind the plate, allowing the runner to have the front corner and the whole front part of home plate. And he slides in. He's eventually ruled out at the time, but then it's challenged and they go to replay. And that's what they found, that they ruled it was catcher's interference because he blocked the plate. What are they looking at? First of all, the umpire is right there to make the call and him being out. And then how can you make a call like that on replay when you've got the angle right there? It's clear as day that he's got room to slide in. There wasn't even contact between the two players. And they still called it a catcher's interference? And that literally cost the Texas Rangers the game. I mean, what are we doing here with the replay, Major League Baseball?
I don't know.
Atrocious. And even the White Sox broadcast,
maybe they were busy.
Even acknowledged that the White Sox got away with a win. I mean, that's pretty pathetic when the broadcast of said team that is beneficial of a horrendous call like that says something, you know you've got a problem. I mean, that rule in particular needs to be looked at, and the way that replay worked needs to be looked at. I mean, that's as bad as it gets when it comes to Major League Baseball. I'm sorry. That is absolutely atrocious.
Oh, I thought it was Gerrit Cole wagging his finger and then throwing pitches over the head of guys. I thought that was,
Well, that was stupid, too. Yeah, I didn't think that was a good look for him either.
He's good at that. Yeah. It's June. It's as close as he'll get to the World Series. All right. You're not in favor of replay. This is after I went through a whole thing yesterday about the human element in sports. You hate humans.
Well, I've always been for replay. They got the call wrong in this case.
I can't even get you to donate to the Human Fund.
No, señor! No, señor! No, señor!
Yeah, just, you know, just it's more of a, you know, it's kind of a charity thing. And your excuse every time is charity begins at home. I don't know what that means.
You got to teach them young. That's how it rolls.
Well, you know, it's just, again, I have concerns. All right. That can't be the only thing that is on your wonderful mind today.
Well, I am kind of laughing at the Celtics a little bit because I think they're actually making a very big mistake. And I'm just curious what they're trying to do here. Is that, as Shams Charania is reporting, that the Celtics are in talks for a three-way trade with the Clippers and the Wizards that would send Kristaps Porzingis to Boston, Marcus Morris and draft compensation to Washington, and Malcolm Brogdon to L.A. Sides are still working through details and Porzingis' $36 million player option. That's fine with me. If you want to trade away Malcolm Brogdon, who was a terrific guy off the bench for the Celtics and was a big part of their run this year, for, to me, one of the most overrated players right now in basketball, and Kristaps Porzingis, that's fine with me, honestly. I mean, that opens things up for the top four teams that have gone around in the East right now in the NBA. So I have no clue what the Celtics are doing, but hey, I'm fine with it. I've just never gotten the enamorment that comes with Kristaps Porzingis. The guy can't stay on the floor, first of all, and second of all, he's a twig. The guy brings nothing to the table, in my opinion, except $36 million plus to add to your payroll. So I'm okay with that. Have fun with that, Boston.
You're the same organization that kept Tobias Harris and traded Jimmy Butler.
Not proud of that, but yeah.
How are things over in the glass house?
It could be better. Could be better.
I think I know what they're trying to do here. I think they're trying to add some size that can score. And they're going to give up a guard to do it. And part of it's going to be how much money they're going to give the max contract to Jaylen Brown, which he's eligible for. Keep him. Obviously, you're keeping Tatum. You're going to keep Robert Williams. You're keeping Marcus Smart. So now the question is, do you want some size that can score as opposed to another guard who can score? And I think that's what the dilemma is.
I think they were fine the way they were.
They may have been. We'll find out. I'm saying that's probably what the thought process is here. When you look at, for example, Bobby Porter Jr. is size that can score. You look at... with the Lakers, AD and LeBron, that's size that can score. Luka Doncic is size that can score. Porzingis is not the star he was projected to be. He was picked by the Knicks and by Phil Jackson. His career has not worked out. There's just no getting around it. It just has not worked out. But I think that's what the theory is behind this. So if you're asking what's the thought process behind it, that's the thought process behind it. I think the thought process is I need some more size that can rebound for me but can also score and can face up and shoot. And I think that's probably the thought process behind it, besides getting another guard that's very good. I mean, there's no question in my mind. He is very, very good. Very good. And he's somebody that impresses me. I'm talking about Brogdon. I like Brogdon. And the next part of it is, you know, I mean, Porzingis is going to have to obviously be one of those guys that's available to play, because that's a big part of this. Every time I turn around in this league, there's somebody that's a very good player that's not available to play. It happens over and over again in this league. And that's one of the problems that they have. They do very well with the ratings. I mean, the ratings for the finals were... I had said that it was going to be a statement about where the NBA is by what we saw in the finals, ratings-wise. And they came through. It was big. And it really, the series was only five games. It was dominated by one team. But, you know, it's also not during a ratings period. That's one of the reasons why the NBA, finals in June. Because May is the sweeps month. And they keep it out of the sweeps month. I'm at the point now where if they wanted to go into the sweeps month, I think they could. And I think they'd win. Sports wins. But that was the original thought process about why the NBA finals happened to be in June. Because they were trying to deliberately keep it out of May, out of sweeps month. Because that's what ABC wanted. And it did well. Now you're going to have a lot of movement. I mean, here's what's going to happen, in my opinion, with so many teams. They're trying to figure out what's that last piece to get them over the top. You heard Dan Patrick talking about the dilemma for the Portland Trailblazers. What do you do? What do you do with Damian Lillard? Right, he's your star. Do you build around him? Do you acquire Bam Adebayo from the Miami Heat? Give him that extra big man that's in there. How do you draft with that third overall pick? Do you deal the third overall pick? Everybody's trying to figure out a way of how do I get deeper into the playoffs. And that's what they're trying to do. Let's face it. Why have the Sixers made the moves they've made in recent years? Because they're trying to get deeper in the playoffs. I mean, none of them have worked. But that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get deeper into the playoffs. And it hasn't worked. To be frank with you, it just flat out hasn't worked.
Yeah,
but they've been trying. I mean, in other words, they're making an effort to somehow get deeper in the playoffs. They're trying to find the right combination, and they just have not found the right combination. And like I said, they did make a flat out mistake when it came to. And you knew it at the time. I mean, it's one of those things you sit back and go, okay, I don't get it. Why trade him and not him? And my thought process is whenever I see something like that and I have a question, I then sit back and say, okay, I'm not around the team every day. I don't know what the locker room looks like. I don't know how the guy is away, with other guys. And those are elements I don't know. So since I don't know them, I'm a little more reserved on commentary when it comes to them for that particular reason. I mean, that's the reason why I'll get a little more reserved on commentary, because I'm trying to factor in my own experience of being around teams and embedded with teams, which then gives me at least a perspective, okay, of why something may or may not be happening. But on pure talent, I didn't get the Harris-Butler thing at all. At all. But, I'm just a simple shepherd. I have no idea. I'll say this. I mean, your team is good entertainment. When it comes to this show, they are flat-out comical.
They are sports talk gold, I'll tell you that. And they've been basically since the process.
Process, I never got.
Me neither.
Never got that. And I think that is a real backhanded slap at your fan base when you're telling them, you know, like, hey, look, you know, you're going to have to endure this for a few years. Like, oh, wait a minute, endure what for a few years? What are you talking about? You know, and their talent evaluations have been so poor. You know, Okafor from Duke, like, I mean, he can't defend you. I mean, everybody knew he could play some offense, but everybody knew that he was just such a mediocre defender. There's no way he was going to be able to defend on this level. He couldn't defend on the college level. Ben Simmons did not like him at all in college. I'm watching him at LSU, and I'm like, I'm sitting there like, I don't get it. Markelle Fultz, I absolutely didn't get it. I mean, if you're going to have the process, you better be pretty precise about who you're picking. They won big with Embiid. Obviously, he was a very good player. I know he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I know he's the Bill Russell of the modern era. Okay, but that's okay. He's not even the best center in the history of Philadelphia.
That's true.
He's not even. I hope not.
That is, and will always be Will. But you know.
And then Moses Malone.
Yes, of course.
Right. And right now, there's some nights I'd take Nick Dawkins, Dad. Oh, God. He's the greatest. He's not even the best guy in your own city. What? Oh, yeah, we have Wilt. Oh, yeah, we have Moses Malone. Okay. Yeah. It's all right. Someday one of your teams will win. And that'll be probably on a day that we're all off. It's a holiday anyway, and you won't be able to gloat.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
I think it's a good chance. It's probably, for all of your teams combined, it's probably a good decade away. So we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door, and some things that don't. Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
We should do a promo where it's like nothing but your rants. And the more incoherent, the better.
I'll keep that in mind.
I mean, no, seriously, from my seat, there's a whole bunch of them.
I know there is. I don't deny it.
We ought to have a camera in here.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee. Fabulous service department that makes it all work. From the time you get to the vehicle until the time you trade it in for your next Sunbury Motors vehicle. It's all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Latest Penn State football camp. Camp time is now underway as of today. Tomorrow will be Lift for Life from 4 to 5:30. over at the Lash Practice Fields to benefit the rare disease community. And the football players organized this themselves. They put it together. And they'll be on hand doing Live for Life tomorrow over at the Lash Practice Fields. Any donation you can make would certainly help them out. Penn State has been number one. That football program, those players have been number one now since this all started 19 years ago in fundraising for the rare disease community. So that's going to be tomorrow at the Lash Fields from 4 to 5:30. The NBA draft will also be tomorrow night. We did talk yesterday about Derek Lively, who grew up in Bellefonte. His mom, Kathy Drysdale, works at Penn State. Derek spent his 1 year at Duke and then opted to go to the NBA draft. The latest mock draft I saw last night had him as the 10th overall pick, possibly going to the Dallas Mavericks. And there are two Penn Staters in the second round that are distinct possibilities in Seth Lundy and Jalen Pickett. It's interesting. The NBA is what it is, and their style of play is what it is. I've had some people ask me about Zach Edey, and I said, "Look," and I said a year ago on this show, 1 year ago, when that draft came up, that Zach Edey would play his senior year at Purdue. Why? His game does not translate to the league. It just does not translate to the league. Remember, we were just talking about Kristaps Porzingis. Hey, now look, is he the greatest player? No, but what can he do? He's an inside-out player. Luka Doncic is an inside-out player. Victor Wembanyama, the first overall pick in the draft, is an inside-out player. These are all big players that can go inside-out. Zach can't do that. He cannot do that. And he doesn't run the floor like Robert Williams. Right? He doesn't defend like Draymond Green. He just doesn't. Now, he went through the NBA draft process, and that was a very smart thing for him to do. I'm sure he picked up a lot along the way, but it didn't take him long, I'm sure, for him to realize, okay, it's not a good fit. Now, they've been able to do a very good job of working around the NIL rules. For some reason, everybody seems to think, oh, you know, he's got all this NIL rolling in. Well, he's not allowed to get NIL in this country. Zach Edey is not an American citizen. He is from Toronto. But they've been able to work with some charities in the Toronto area that have been able to funnel a significant amount of NIL in his direction by circumventing the rule. That's why you'll see foreign players at schools, and they'll enter the NBA draft, and you'll ask why. I mean, the guy was the MOP of the Final Four from UConn is in the draft. Well, he's not eligible for NIL money. Just the way the rule is. I didn't make the rule. But, you know, he's looking around saying, how am I going to get some money? I can't get some money by staying. I mean, oh, he'll get that NIL. Excuse me. You know, it's like, no, it's not the rule. So Edey has gone back, and I think most players, for the most part, have made good decisions, like Cliff Amori. I knew Amori would come back. Same story. Very limited range offensively, despite the fact that he's an excellent college center and a really good athlete. But again, it doesn't fit. Ask why Hunter Dickinson. It was such a big deal he went to Kansas. And he talked about, well, I wasn't getting six figures in NIL. Okay, that's true. You weren't at Michigan. But that's the only way he's going to make money, by staying. He didn't, like, forego the NBA draft. The NBA has decided to forego him. And that's just the nature of what the league is. The league is not just three-pointers, but you have to have that as part of your arsenal to play in the league. That's why when Matt was talking about Porzingis earlier, I said they might be looking for a guy that's an inside-out player with size. And that's what they're looking for. Look at the value, for example, of Joel Embiid. Now, he does not take a lot of three-point shots. He'll take maybe two or three three-point shots a game. Right? And he'll hit one of them. But at least he hits one of them. I mean, he's about a 33% three-point shooter. But he can at least step out there and hit, not only take the shot, but can hit the shot. That's the kind of seven-footer you want in the league. Somebody with that kind of size who can play with his back to the basket, who can rebound, has a lot of power, who can put the ball on the deck, and by the way, can step out beyond 23, 24 feet and hit the shot. That's the league. Now, you'll get some guys in there that like Bam Adebayo is not. I mentioned him earlier about he being linked with Portland. That was from the Dan Patrick commentary. Adebayo's not a three-point shooter. Robert Williams of the Celtics is not a three-point shooter. I mean, there's some guys in the league that are not three-point shooters. Steven Adams is not a three-point shooter. You know, Zion Williamson, well, I can't really judge him. He never plays. But are limited on their but there are other elements that they bring. This is such a pass, catch, shoot league right now. So take Brandon Miller of Alabama. He'll be one of the first three players taken in the draft in all likelihood. He is out of his system with Nate Oates. That is pure NBA. Nate Oates has three things he wants to see offensively. He either wants to see a layup, or a free throw, or a three-pointer. That is the entire scope of his offense, and Miller fits that. That's why he will be a fit in the NBA. Because that's the offense he played in college, and that's the offense they play in the NBA. They want layups, free throws, or three-pointers. Not a lot of mid-range game in the NBA anymore. And that's where the draft comes in, and there'll be three G League players that might be in the top five. I was asked a couple of weeks ago by somebody about whether the G League, and in particular G League Ignite, bothered me. And I said, absolutely not. I said, it's fine. I said, I have no problem with that at all. Look, college, okay, is not for everybody. It's not for everybody. You know, I don't care whether you're a basketball player or you want to be an electrician or a plumber. You go to trade school. Right? You have to make the choice that's right for you. And you know, guys like Scoot Henderson and the Thompson twins were like, I don't want to go to college. I mean, going to college is great. Getting your degree is fabulous. But these guys already had their mind set that they're going to go with the NBA. And those three players I just mentioned, the Thompson twins and Scoot Henderson, are going to be three of the top five picks in the draft. Well, it sounds to me, just based on the monetary part of it, it's a smart decision. That's all you're looking for from these guys. Are they making the right decisions along the way? You know, for Jalen Pickett, going to Siena, then to Penn State, and going all the way through, that was the right decision. Seth Lundy playing 4 years, that was the right decision. And there are other guys that fall into that category. There are some that are one and dones. For Derek Lively, it's going to be a smart decision. Derek's going to get a lot of money. And Kathy, I mean his mom, Kathy Drysdale, she knows how to handle it. She knows how to help him out. And this money isn't for her. That's not how Kathy is. But Derek's gonna get a lot of money by making this move. Then we'll find out in a basketball world. Then you find out in a basketball world whether it was, you know, whether they can get a second contract or not, which then starts setting them up for life. There's one thing with young players in the Portland Trailblazers. This is back when you were allowed to draft players out of high school. They drafted a player by the name of Jermaine O'Neal. And O'Neal just kind of didn't really know better than tread water in Portland. And finally, when he hit the free agent market, he ended up going to the Indiana Pacers. Well, at this point, when he goes to Indiana, he's now 22, 23, 24 years old. He's older, more mature. His game comes into focus. He actually learned a lot in Portland, and he actually had a very good run with the Indiana Pacers. And the complaint that Portland had was, you know, he says, we don't really want to draft high school players and then be their training ground for 4 years and then have them go someplace else where they end up really good. And that was the Blazers' complaint about it. What's interesting about what the NBA did was I said over and over again on this show, I ended up not being right about it. I said they're going to change the rule. They're going to let 18-year-olds back in the draft. I also said, though, this part I was correct about, that if I were in the rank and file, I'd be like, what are you fighting for high school players for? I already pay my union dues. Why don't you fight for me? Why don't you fight for my fellow players here? We're the dues-paying people here. And you know what happened? That's exactly what they told the union. We're the dues-paying people. You need to fight for us and not fight for high school players. And the NBA Players Association backed off, and they kept one and done in there in the new contract. The NBA, in 2008... proposed, the ownership did, 2 years and 20 years of age. I don't blame them one bit for wanting that. Because if I am in ownership and I'm running the league, I want a more mature league. I want a little bit older, a little bit more knowledge, a little bit more in really knowing how to play and how to figure out what your role happens to be. As opposed to young players coming in and don't have a complete grasp of fundamentals, it's a mixed bag, but some of them don't have a great grasp of fundamentals. Some have developed some bad AAU habits. And then some of them get money and have no idea how to handle it. So it's a mixed bag there as to what you're getting when you have a less mature league. Now, it doesn't mean you can be mature and not handle money right. The suit drives it, you go. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
FOULED, that spells fouled up!
Great to have you with us, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Mike Muscala is going to join us on the program on Friday. Mike's going into the Bucknell Hall of Fame. And, you know, Mike was just with the Celtics, so he has no idea how much Matt doesn't like him.
He was the lone exception.
Oh, please, okay. Your general hatred of the whole organization, you can't sit here and suck up now once it's been called out. You can't do that. All right? But why has Mike been able to keep his career alive in the league? He's a big man who can move and can hit the outside shot. Plus all, everything else that he does. Mike can rebound. Mike's a great team player. He's a good passer. But Mike can also step out and he can hit the outside shot. That's why he's still in the league. He's kept his career alive by doing it this way. And I give Mike a lot of credit. I discuss this all the time, so this is not foreign territory here. But you look at the NFL and you look at the NBA, Major League Baseball, the NHL, it doesn't matter which league it happens to be. I have such admiration for the people that can somehow, some way, keep their career alive. And I just think that is, to me, that's something special because it takes a real perseverance. And look at all the different places Mike's played. I mean, Mike's been all over the map, just like Tim Frazier was all over the map with all the various teams he played for. There's several guys in the NFL that have moved all over the place and played, guys in the NHL that moved up because they found a way to not only keep their career alive, but to establish a role that is a way to convince teams that they have value. And Mike's convinced teams over and over again that he has value being on their roster. And he's such a quality person, for goodness sakes. Great person, smart. That I think that part doesn't take much to convince somebody of his value. And we'll talk to Mike on Friday about this. We'll have Mike for about maybe 10 minutes on Friday afternoon. We're looking forward to it very much on the show. So Garrett Cole got mad because somebody was following the rules. That bothers him.
No, I thought he looked dumb last night.
I
was not impressed by that whatsoever.
Pitched well, though. I think that's what, 7 wins he's had after a Yankee loss. Pretty good. I mean, give him a lot of credit. Stopped the bleeding on a long losing streak for the Yankees. Right now, Diamondbacks lead the Brewers 2-1 in the bottom of the sixth. The Astros lead the Mets 6-4 top of the fourth. Cardinals Nationals play at 4:05. Cubs won again over the Pirates. That's a 3-game sweep. But the Pirates did do something today they had not done in the 2 previous games. They scored. The Cubs won 8-3. The other 2 games, they were shut out. Tigers beat the Royals 9-4. The Pirates are really struggling now. They're now 5 games under 500. And the averages are all dropping. Henry Davis, got that double on right out of the gate. That's the only hit he has. He's 1-for-10 now. Ke'Bryan Hayes is hitting 255. How about Rich Hill? He already has 13 decisions this year. He's 6-7. Yay. A lot of decisions early in the season. But, I mean, they've fallen behind the Cubs. I mean, the Pirates are now in fourth. They've fallen behind the Cubs in the league at this stage. Tough win for the Phillies last night. The Braves are just playing great. I mean, the Braves have won 7 in a row. And you know what? They're the only team in the National League East, right? And that has outscored the opposition. And they've done it to the tune of 102 runs. You know who the only team in the National League Central is that has outscored the opposition to this point? No answer.
Is that the Pirates?
No, it's the Cubs.
Oh.
They're the only team in the National League Central that has outscored the opponent. Amazing. But the Braves, and I know you can't stand the Braves, who are playing at a 644 clip. What is it about them you don't like? The fact that they're good? The fact they're what?
It's more or less their fan base that annoys me.
Their fan base?
Yes.
What is it about their fan base you don't like?
I've always found them obnoxious, and also fair weather fans, too, to some extent. Because during the playoff run, well, I guess the World Series was pretty good, but like even when they were starting to get back as a relevant team again, like they still couldn't even fill that new ballpark, which is a beautiful ballpark. Now with the World Series, they finally did, but even that took up some revving up to do. Just the entire, this goes back to my despise of. Of pro sports fan base is really in the South, that all they're invested in, which is fine, that's their prerogative, is college sports, and that's it.
Well, but that's the culture that they grew up in, for goodness sakes. I mean, ask yourself why. Okay, this is when the Falcons had red helmets. Why do the Falcons' team colors look exactly like the University of Georgia? This is before they made the switch to the black helmets and the black jerseys. Because they knew that's what they were appealing to. They were trying to win over because it took a long time for professional sports to get into the South. And because it took so long for professional sports to get into the South, college sports became ingrained in the fan base. I mean, New York had three Major League Baseball teams. Right. For a long period of time, South had none. It wasn't until the Braves moved from Milwaukee to Atlanta the South finally got a team. And now you have a lot of people that are snowbirds that go to Arizona, Florida, and they are not Diamondbacks, Rays, or Marlins fans.